Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, no threat to Liverpool, and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
The news run on Off the Ball
with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, start your razors.
This is News Talk.
Hey folks, you're welcome along. Monday evening's Off the Ball, Joe Malloy with you, and we have a lot going on, not least in the world of football, which calls for the presence of two great football men, John Giles, Pat Nevin, with us at 7:30 and 9 o'clock respectively. Robbie Fowler was part of our recent roadshow. He's going to pick his dream five-a-side. Well, he's done it, but we'll play it to you just after 8:45 or so. Monday Night Rugby, Jerry Thornley, Matt Williams, the small matter of the All Blacks on Saturday after what must be said was a very impressive performance by Ireland against Japan at the weekend. 53106, the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Dave McIntyre is with us for the news round. Exciting times, Dave. Hello.
How are you, Joe?
We said Ireland, Portugal Thursday, All Black Saturday. It's a marquee week. We need a marquee name.
Yes.
And here you are.
You exhausted your list and decided you'd have to settle for 18th best.
Nobody was around, Dave. Richie McCormack, hello.
I joined the panel as a fan of the television album Marquee Moon, so I think that's my vague, tenuous connection to proceedings tonight, Joe.
Very good. Well, you're more than welcome. There is a lot going on, Dave. So we had Ireland against Japan at the weekend, looking impressive, throwing offloads, 18 offloads. That was about four games worth not so long ago.
Yeah, it was probably at one stage an entire Six Nations worth of offloads, almost in one half of rugby. I sat down to watch it. I wasn't sure what to expect because both teams have played so little rugby, particularly obviously Japan. I think two or three tests since the World Cup quarterfinal defeat South Africa. But I was very impressed by what I saw. I thought we were clinical. I thought we were ambitious. Our handling was excellent. Some of the passing through the channels was superb, especially those with, you know, you need the really quick hands as the tackle comes in right on that gain line and flick it out to a man outside you. And we finished most of the chances that came our way. Sexton marked it with a try, his 100th cap. Looked emotional afterwards. I know the tickets weren't selling to the point where the IRFU were hoping in the build-up, but it looked pretty full. Great atmosphere. All in all, it was a really good day.
Eerily perfect, worryingly perfect day ahead of the All Blacks on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone getting carried away. I don't think anyone watches that against what's clearly an undercooked Japanese side and thinks, well, you know, I saw one article suggesting that we'd exercise the demons of the World Cup. Really haven't. I mean, beating them in November in 2021 goes in no way close to exercising what the demons of what happened to that World Cup game, because I mean that was a really damaging defeat, and it's going to take a big win over Japanese side in a World Cup in the future to exercise those particular demons. But we can only live in the now, and if that is the first of several steps in this sort of direction, even if we lose heavily at the weekend against the All Blacks but are quite obviously trying to continue the road that they've gone down, well, then that can only be a positive.
Meanwhile, and John Giles will join us 7:30, Ireland play Portugal, of course, on Thursday. Lots of build-up over the week to that. So just a final glance backwards this evening at the weekend that was, because a lot went on. I mean, two managerial sackings, Man City strolling through 90 minutes at Old Trafford. I mean, it was boring in the second half. They were just so in control. Arsenal up to fifth. They're going well. Chelsea dropped points. West Ham, the story in many ways of the league thus far, up to third, big win against Liverpool, Dave. So I don't know what caught your eye over the weekend.
Well, it's those two games, the Manchester derby and the West Ham-Liverpool game. I mean, I'm not quite sure what you can say about the Manchester United situation anymore. I mean, there literally isn't a club in any top league in the world that would continue with their manager under these circumstances. I think Solskjaer is literally the only guy that would be able to survive this at the only club that would be willing to accept the dismal string of performances that they've now put together. And they're quite obviously a side that's going nowhere. And why they're persisting with him, I don't think anyone outside of the board at Manchester United could come up with an answer for that, because at this stage they are in the situation where they were with Mourinho, where you're saying to people, literally anybody would be able to get more out of these players than he currently is. And I really feel sorry for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because he seems to be a very good fella, and his standing, you know, it actually reminded me, I was speaking to someone yesterday about it, it's reminded me of the Steve Staunton situation, where with every game that he was continuing to be in charge, it just took another little chink out of the extraordinary legacy he'd left as a player. And unfortunately, and maybe people would disagree, but when I think of Steve Staunton, in equal measure, I think of his managerial stint and his century of caps, playing in three World Cups and one of the greatest defenders and greatest players and one of the greatest left foots we've ever seen wear the green of Ireland. And I think Solskjaer is now in that territory where week on week, the legacy he has as a player of that club is being eaten away. West Ham, I just think it's an unbelievable story. And I genuinely did not think they would be able to combine their Europa League duties and a crack at another top six or top eight finish in the Premier League. And I still do feel it's going to hurt them when we get into the December fixtures, because he's got a pretty small squad and he picks from a very small group of players. But at the moment, they are a match for anybody in the Premier League. And it's quite extraordinary to watch.
Rich, on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer legacy point, it's funny Dave mentions that, because I did have the same thought over the weekend, and I was imagining when this is all over, and it's going to be over pretty soon, I mean, relatively speaking, you can imagine in 10 years' time when the camera cuts to the crowd and it turns out Solskjaer is at the game, because things are so bad now and he's almost undoing a lot of the good work that he genuinely had done, and that things are going backwards and it's becoming a bit of a fiasco. You will, I think, when you look at Solskjaer in the crowd in 10 years' time at a United match, every bit as much as you will think of Barcelona 99, you will think, God, the management thing really fell apart on him. And that's terrible. I mean, you play the game, you take your chances, and it can blow up in your face. 7 million a year, admittedly, but it's blowing up in his face nonetheless. And it's legacy damaging now for Solskjaer.
Yeah, when I was on with Johnny Ward on Thursday night there, we kind of touched on the Staunton thing. Oddly enough, it came up via different means. But I think where he differs with Staunton is that, and I'm not a Manchester United fan, I'd hate to speak for them, but I don't think with Manchester United fans his legacy will be tarnished all that much. Forevermore, he'll be that guy who scored in the Champions League final and won them the Champions League and the treble in 1999. And this will be because it's Manchester United, and eventually they will come round full circle and be a successful club again. This will be a small footnote in the Solskjaer legacy, where it changes everything from everybody else's concern. If you're not a Manchester United fan, is that he's a punchline now. He's not the guy who won them the Champions League in 1999. He is a joke of a manager. I'm not saying that, you know, from my point of view, but from the quote-unquote banter side point of view, he is regarded as a punchline now in Manchester United's history. But I think Manchester United fans, like actual proper fans who are old enough to remember these things, will always regard him in high esteem, regardless of how this peters out. And it is petering out. And he would be, and it would be within the club's and his interest to end this now, because it going any further, based on the evidence of any meaningful opposition that they face this season, it's just only going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, the best effort at an explanation as to why they're letting this drift comes from Gary Neville, I think, who does speak to people at the club, and he has just said they're shocked that they're in this position. They're shocked at how bad it's been. They weren't talking about, well, we need to have managerial options to hand, and they've almost been caught by surprise. And I mean, it is hard to have foreseen just how badly this has gone. So that's about the best explanation.
They're one of the few clubs, one of the few club hierarchies who took last season, for want of a better phrase, stealing it out of John Gilesmith, who took it on its own merits. Last season, given the nature of the empty stadiums and the freakish nature of the season as a whole, like, that wasn't a true reflection of where teams are necessarily in the Premier League, particularly in and around Manchester City. What we're seeing this season, I think, is far more of a real reflection of where teams are in relation to one another. The top three, or four now, I guess, bears that out. But United's second position, I don't think you could have seen that as a genuine one, and one that was a proper standing and a proper platform towards the title challenge this year, no matter how much money they threw at the squad this summer. Because anybody from the outside of the club could have seen and told you that guy is not going to win you a Champions League and he's not going to win you a Premier League. Mm. And instead, they decided to throw an awful lot more money on players, the most of whom they're not actually using, Jadon Sancho being the case in point. And they just need to make a call. The fact that they're not in a position to make a call speaks volumes of the mismanagement. Like, I kind of find it funny. Like, I know United fans would be angry at that, but I always find situations where there's this much money sloshing around and yet you don't seem to have an intelligent brain cell to make a call. I just find those situations just intrinsically
funny. Well, I think they're petrified of getting the next appointment wrong, with good reason, because they haven't really got one right.
As opposed to the last three or four.
But that's the point, because They're on thin ice now. They haven't got one right since Ferguson, really. You couldn't say any of them have been an unqualified success, anything close to it. So I think they're petrified. How, like, we can't take a chance on the next German wonder kid who emerges, you know, the next Nagelsmann. We need something that's going to guarantee a success. So I think that's why they're stalling so much. But we got to move on. Somebody says, all I'm hearing about the rugby team is that they're throwing off the shackles. Whoever's the chief manufacturer of shackles in Ireland must be doing a roaring trade, because Irish teams across all sports appear to operate while shackled most of the time. Look, we've been a shackled people. We are often a shackled sporting nation, Dave, I would say.
Well, there's a lot of strands to that. We could debate that kind of stuff all night. But we have been playing, certainly with regard to the rugby team, a certain way for far too long. And a way that has not brought an awful lot of success outside of the Grand Slam season of 2018. And that is a long, long time ago now. So it is about time to maybe take a leaf out of the Japanese copybook and look at doing things a little bit differently. And we have skillful players in this country, and we have players that like to play the game in a certain way. And if we go down that road and it's unsuccessful, we're probably no worse a position than we were, for example, in the dying embers of the Joe Schmidt era, or the first year or so of the Andy Farrell era. But I just want to see this continue, and I want us to see it take a couple of chances against New Zealand and then pick an experimental 15 against Argentina and start putting in place the building blocks for the World Cup in a couple of years' time and not be so focused on results.
My only other takeaway from the weekend is Sky Sports need to send Roy Keane to interview Ole Gunnar Solskjaer so he can grab him by the throat and scream, "Why are you playing Fred?" I mean, I just couldn't wait for that game to end on Saturday. It just couldn't end soon enough so we could get straight to studio. Richie, your first story is an interesting one. I hadn't seen this. The news round, which will start now, is with thanks to Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, start your razors. It concerns referees.
Yeah, this one would affect a lot of people, actually. The North Dublin Schoolboys and Girls League has postponed all of this weekend's upcoming matches. It follows what they call an escalation in the abuse directed at referees from parents, from other clubs, etc., etc. The Easter Women's Football League have also joined the NDSL in the walkout of this weekend's matches, and the NDSL say discussions will take place with referees regarding the following weekend's fixtures.
Yeah, amazing. So 80 match officials kicked this off, and then the leagues had to cancel all the games. So I'm sure thousands of you listening, because it does affect thousands of kids between the ages of 17 and 18, now suddenly have no match at the weekend, all because of the treatment of referees. So the NDSL chief executive, Tony Gaines, I saw a quote from him, and he was saying in an online post, "This weekend, a female referee refereeing her first game of three games abused so badly from the time she entered the pitch, she decided she's not taking any more of this abuse from these people, and she's now decided to give up refereeing entirely." Just one example, and there are loads of examples, obviously, that we've seen over the years. Daniel Sweeney, that referee who was assaulted 3 years ago in Mullingar, probably the most extreme case we've seen. But like, this just needs to be stopped, Dave, doesn't it? I played DDSL growing up all the years, and some of the abuse referees take is just embarrassing. And it's basically, they're saying here, I was reading a few reports, look, there's a little bit from the kids, of course, but in the main, no surprise, it is idiot parents on the sideline and it's idiot coaches on the sideline, and they're an embarrassment.
They are. They're an embarrassment to themselves, but I doubt that matters too much to them. Let's think about the sort of people that we're dealing with here. These are not our brightest and our best, these sorts of people. And I've seen children on the field being absolutely mortified by the behaviour of their parents. And let's face it, when you heard this news, was there any part of you that was remotely surprised that it's got to this point?
I'm glad you're on. And Rich, I don't know if your kids are playing ball, yeah. I don't have kids, but DDSL was the main league I played in growing up. And I would say, I thought it was generally okay-ish with some fairly memorable exceptions. But I could see how it would, you know, get in a referee's wick. I've no sense of where we are in 2021, Dave.
Well, but the level that my son is playing at is we don't have referees. We just look after the games ourselves. So I can only go back to my own playing days. And like you, it's gone back a long time. So I'd never recall being struck by the level of abuse that referees were taking when I was playing soccer. But I am currently playing Gaelic football, and I have been struck by the lack of animosity, abuse, disregard for and disrespect towards the referees at the level I'm playing now. It's a very low level, but I can't recall barely a single incident. I've seen referees come to the sideline and show a yellow card to a selector or a mentor, but I have been struck by the respect that referees are generally shown at the level I'm playing at, and that's Gaelic football. But we do see stories regularly emerging from the GAA about the abuse that referees have to take.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And I don't know what the clubs can do, but the fact is, much as the GAA and rugby and football and every sport from the grassroots up is built on volunteerism in this country, and I think a lot of people forget that your sons and daughters will not have a training session to go to this weekend if the parents of some of the kids your son or daughter plays with steps up and takes the session and takes responsibility and coaches the team. I think some parents don't get that. But equally, there's no way that once you get into the under 12 and upwards level, the game simply will not take place. Your son or daughter will not have a team to play for if there's nobody to referee the game. And I don't know how you get that message across, but the sport will literally crumble without the referees.
Mm, well, there's no games this weekend. So we're talking again, ages of 7 to 18. It's the North Dublin Schoolboys and Schoolgirls League, the Metropolitan Girls League and the Eastern Women's Football League. So that's where we are. Richard, are you attending kids' games with referees yet?
Yeah, I've first-hand experience of Dave McIntyre, the coach, by the way. And can I say that on the sideline, that man is... Like, the hairdryer doesn't do him justice. I mean, it's vicious, the stuff he comes out with. I'll be honest. Yes, I do. Two of the three lads are involved in soccer now and Gaelic football and hurling. And I'll be honest, I haven't, like, the eldest lad's 10. I haven't seen anything yet. Like, and the pool of experience, I was out in Cordoff yesterday with him. He was playing a soccer match out there and, like, nothing. Like, it was all fairly quiet and fairly respectful. Very respectful, in fact. There was nothing of that sort on the sideline. All very encouraging and all very quiet.
Okay.
But you do hear it. And, I don't have to go far to hear it. There's a park just up the road from us here where you can hear it on a Saturday and Sunday morning where there's dogs abuse being thrown in all directions. And it's... Like the referees in this instance are only fully within the right to say, listen, this is enough, and walk off and hopefully enact some kind of change. I wouldn't be overly hopeful that it will do the job in the long term, but hopefully in the short term it does. And it does shake a few heads together and gets a few people to actually see some sense, because it needs to be seen.
Yeah, well, 53106, be curious for any stories out there. We'll read out a few texts at some stage. Clock is coming against us. We have the great John Giles on the way, Rich, so feel free to blitz through a couple of stories. I don't know what else is going on.
Callum O'Dowda called into the Republic of Ireland squad for the first time in a year. The Bristol City winger replaces James Collins, who's had to pull out with an injury ahead of this week's World Cup qualifiers with both Portugal and Luxembourg. Eddie Howe today confirmed, as we all know, as the new manager at Newcastle United. He signed a contract with the Premier League Strugglers that runs until 2024. Meanwhile, Newcastle have reportedly turned their attentions to Michael Emenalo in their hunt for a director of football. Primary target Mark Overmars wants to stay with Ajax, putting the former Chelsea director of football top of their revised list. Robbie Henshaw could play his first game of the season against the All Blacks. The centre has returned to full training with Ireland following a foot injury. Henshaw yet to play for either Leinster or Ireland so far this season. However, Munster back row Gavin Coombs will miss Saturday's game at the Aviva as he recovers from illness. And the Wales Rugby Union has banned a pitch invader from Wales home matches for life. The 28-year-old man ran onto the field during the second half of Wales' 5-point loss to the Springboks just as the hosts looked set to score a try through Liam Williams. It's believed the incursion was down to a £20 bet. Another pitch invader interrupted the Japan anthem during Saturday's game at the Aviva. While former Monaghan manager Malachy O'Rourke guided Glenn to the Derry Senior Football Ground yesterday, they won their first ever senior title with a 113-7 win over Schlochneil. They'll play St Newnan's in the Ulster Club Championship. That's after the Letterkenny men won the Donegal title with a 111-4 win over Naoimh Connell. Mace are the Kildare champions, as you well know, Joe, following their 14-12 win over Sarsfields.
I see that pitch invader who got in Liam Williams' way and who got the dirtiest look imaginable from Josh Adams with his hands on his hips afterwards. He's been, according to the Wales Online newspaper, receiving death threats, and it was over a £20 bet, reportedly. That is the hardest earned £20 of his life, Dave McIntyre. I can only imagine.
What can you say about people like this, Joe? I've read the Welsh Rugby Union statement that came through, and he's actually a registered member of one of the rugby clubs in Wales. So he's more than just a casual fan who decided to, you know, act out at a rare visit to the Principality Stadium. He's actually a rugby supporter. And, you know, you wouldn't want to see a player injured, but had you seen one of these massively built back rowers plow through in an attempt to get a tackle in as that attack unfolded, you probably would have thought there's a little bit of karma going on there. But you don't want anyone injured.
So on the refereeing, by the way, so I knew this would happen. Text machine blows up. Text machine. I keep saying text machine. I sound about 100 saying this.
Ari Vincent Brown.
Oh, my God. The text machine. I said this so... I need to get rid of this.
Send us an SMS.
Yeah. So, yeah, scandalous, lads. It's been like that for years. I don't know how anyone does it. Abuse from idiots to either coaches or referees. Insane. I remember as a 17-year-old, I coached... Well, this is a slightly different point, but I guess indicative of maybe the culture at times. As a 17-year-old, I coached under-11 soccer. A parent followed me home, knocked into the house, abusing me in front of my parents because I wasn't picking his little darling. Is it too simple to say anyone worth their salt wouldn't be speaking vitriol on the sidelines, says Sean in Limerick? It's probably not. I mean, I can see there is just a cultural aspect to it, and you can do it in an unthinking way. Although, I think at this stage, everyone knows it's not the best thing to do. Played soccer all my life. That stuff definitely goes on. I was at my kids' rugby match yesterday. The coach spent 5 minutes talking to the kids about respecting the referee and not answering back, says Dave in Sandymount. Yeah. I mean...
But it's very easy for a referee to deal with abuse from a player. You just pull your yellow and red cards out. You can also abandon the game quite easily. I know a story that came out very recently where a player who was being sent off threatened to slit the throat of the referee after the game. So that game was abandoned and there was a full investigation launched. Now, I would hope that that is at the absolute top extreme end of these sorts of events. But it just shows the sorts of situations that these volunteers, and that's what they are, can find themselves in. And why would you be encouraging your child, your son or your daughter, to go out and get involved in refereeing when you know that there is the potential for this sort of personal abuse, both verbal and violent? It's very difficult to encourage anybody to go out there, and they are the lifeblood of the game. They're as important as the pitches, they're important as the players, they're as important as the coaches. And one, as you say, Joe, I can understand people get very uptight when their children are involved. One outburst or maybe one line, the throwaway line, it can happen.
Yeah,
but this throwaway line does not lead to this development. This is due to constant abuse that is simply unbearable for the referees involved.
Yeah, if you're just tuned in, you're wondering what we're talking about. Just an interesting story. Thousands of junior soccer players won't have a match this weekend because a bunch of the referees have made the decision to withdraw their services following incidents over the weekend. And so the leagues have called off all the games. North Dublin School Boys School and School Girls League, Metropolitan Girls League, Eastern Women's Football League. So that's just what we were discussing there. Fellas, we're out of time. Dave McIntyre, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Richie, I'll catch you tomorrow.
Nice one.
Cheers.